Welcome to episode 78 of the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from the Lex Town, Josh Hopkins. What up, Josh?
What's happening, Rex Everett? I see that you are in Brooklyn.
I'm in Brooklyn hanging out with Prince. You in Austin?
Where are you? I am in Austin, but I'm at a buddy's house. I had a stuff going on in my building. So here I am.
Yeah.
Here I am laying it down.
We have a good show today. We're going to talk NCAA hoops. Big day for us with two of the
best.
But before we get into it, episode 78, Josh, you know any famous 78s in sports?
We know where we both go with this, Rex. We both go to the same place. We don't go with a player per se.
No.
Where do we go? We go to a year.
I thought we were going straight to Philadelphia for the 78ers. No?
No, it's not there. They're the 76ers.
That's right. My bad. Where were you going with it?
1878. I mean, obviously, that's, you know, they started to.
Lots of songs.
The West was won.
Won in 1878.
It was.
It was the Alamo. Something like that in 1878.
No,
1978. What happened in 1978, Josh?
Our University of Kentucky Wildcats took it all back home to Lexington, baby. Joe B, our guy, Joe Basketball Hall.
That's right. Won the whole thing.
Bless his soul.
God rest his soul. Jack Givens, Kyle Macy, Jay Scheidler, Rick Roby,
James Lee,
Mike Phillips, James Lee, Chris Gettelfinger.
James Lee and Givens were both from Lexington.
From Lexington. Dunking that was on so everybody, cool. Shooting jumpers.
The Goose was golden.
He was golden. 41 before the three-pointer in the championship game. Come on.
The high tee.
And he banked one in from the corner.
Nice. Yeah.
Episode 78. Josh, normally we like to – we're avid readers on the show. We normally like to have a weekly book club. Tell our listeners what we've been reading. Did you read anything this week, Josh?
Yeah, it's March Madness. It's the brackets. Of course, no one reads this week. Literally no one does, I don't believe, like in any profession anywhere. So how could I be expected to?
Yeah. Well, okay. Weirdly, I had six books that I was going to read this week I forgot the tournament was on, so I'm not going to be able to read those.
You can get to them just as soon as the tournament's over, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Anyway,
well, that's been book club. Josh, you want to get to our guests?
I really want to, because I got to fill out my bracket, and these are the guys.
Let's do it. We've had one of them on before, and the other, it'll be his first voyage on the show. Let's get to our first guest right away, though. NCAA basketball aficionado, Jeff Goodman.
Man, I'm honored that I got the return call, and listen. I won't lie. This time of year is not easy for me. I've learned over the years. I used to do a million radio hits and whatever through the tournament. And then I realized, like, you know how many times I was on with radio shows when news would break? And I learned over the years, like, don't lock into anything this time of year, because you don't know what's going to happen, right? Coaching searches. Now, obviously, you've got kids transferring left and right. The portal is insanity. So I literally don't lock myself into anything. But for you guys, absolutely, I'm in. You know what I think of the two of you. I love you both. Josh, you know, last time we were together, Chris Beard was still the coach in Austin, Texas. And a lot has changed over there, right?
Yeah, a lot changed. You were there right at the beginning of the season, and we wanted you to have you back for like a mid-season comeback, but Kentucky was struggling so bad I didn't want to hear it.
you didn't want to hear the voice of reason, which is me.
Yeah, I did not. I don't like the voice of reason. I like the rah-rah. Let's just ask you that. What happened to Kentucky this year?
I think early on, Cal just didn't understand, like, all right, I got two shooters. Like, let me throw them out there. You know, Oscar, Toppin, and Wheeler does not work together. I think we talked about this. I'm pretty sure we did in the preseason. I'm pretty sure you and I did when we were in Austin having lunch that day. It doesn't work in today's basketball at any level. I don't care if it's NBA. I don't care if it's college. I don't care if it's elementary school or YMCA, whatever it is. You better have shooters. And finally, he figured that part out. And, you know, they're not great now, but they're at least capable. And I actually love their first round matchup. And I love it for the reasons of right now, Providence and Ed Cooley and what is going on around that program. I don't know how much you guys are aware of all this, but it's out of control right now around the Providence program because they are worried that he is going to Georgetown. He has not said anything publicly that he's not going to Georgetown. I know he's going to listen to Georgetown. And I thought all along, there's no way in hell he's going to go because he's from Providence. And he likes to be liked.
Yeah.
He loves to be liked and loved more than anybody on the planet. So, like, if he goes within league, he is going to get booed back when he comes back home. But I'm telling you, I've talked to people close to him in the last 24 hours. A lot of them think it's going to happen, and he's going to go to Georgia. So what I'm saying is all the distractions that these kids are dealing with, they're hearing it. If I'm hearing it, you're hearing it,
Yeah. They're
hearing it 100 times worse. And Cooley's hearing it. I think he can handle it. It's more the kids I'm worried about. So I really like Kentucky in this first round game.
Okay, well, that being said, we all know the Bryce Hopkins matchup, the story there. Two things. One is, what would a Kentucky look like with Bryce Hopkins on the team this year? Secondly, who else from the Big Blue Nation should we know about that team? Like, who other players should we be scared gets hot or whatnot?
Devin Carter's the other one. Those are their two Devin dudes. Carter. Those are their two dudes, no question. And you can't let them both go off. But yeah, Bryce, I mean, I remember being at whatever that scrimmage was a year ago when I had my big powwow with Cal. I came in for that preseason a year ago. And I remember seeing that scrimmage and I was like, I love Bryce Hopkins. I loved him in that game. I'm like, he's got to play because, again, he's perfect for what anybody needs right now. A versatile forward. Everybody wants a multi-dimensional forward, don't they? That's the rage in the NBA. That's the rage in college. Whatever it is, that's what this kid is, a mismatch big who could step out a bit. He's big. He's strong. He's tough. He's a little undersized, but who cares? It's positionless basketball now. So, yeah, he would help him immensely if he was on that Kentucky team right now. I just, you know, like Toppin's good at times. At times he can make shots from the perimeter, but I still don't trust his perimeter shot. I would rather have Bryce Hopkins than Jacob Toppin 10 out of 10 days. And watch, I mean, you know, Toppin's probably going to come out and make me look bad and destroy Bryce
we
Hopkins.
We hope.
Yeah.
We hope.
He's been playing pretty well down the stretch. He has been playing well. But you do like us to move on to the weekend.
Yep.
Good. Jeff, Jeff, I'm looking at this East bracket, and my gosh, Purdue, Memphis, Duke, Tennessee, Kentucky,
well, Tennessee, Providence. Right off Tennessee. Tennessee, that is a four seed. Like, you love that because they're not really winning. They couldn't score before Ziegler went down.
Yeah, but then you got Marquette, Michigan State. Who's coming out of the East? Who do you have?
Michigan State.
Really? The Spartans. Go Sparty.
I mean, listen.
Why? Tom Izzo?
Yeah, who's a better coach in that region? Like, do you trust Shaka Smart playing against Izzo?
Cal.
Come on. Let's be honest.
Hey, Izzo's taking teams. That.
Rex, come on.
I can.
With yes, a straight face, you cannot
say it's my
say
show. That. It's my show. I can say it.
Izzo's taking teams without as much talent to the Final Four. And and you never thought that about this team to begin the year, but he's taken worse teams to the Final Four.
100%. And you know what he's got?
Tough guy.
Rex. He's got veteran guards. And to me, it starts for me, coaches, if I'm filling out teams to go deep, it's coaching and it's guards and specifically point guard play. And he's got a couple, right? Like Tyson Walker is more of a two guard, but he's been frigging fantastic this year after. I remember Izzo a year ago complaining to me. I've seen Tyson Walker at Northeastern. He transfers, and with a new rule, Tyson Walker didn't have to sit out. And Izzo was pissed. He was like, if Tyson Walker sat out last year, how good? He was telling me this last year. He's like, he's going to be really good this year. And he's been awesome. The key is AJ Hogard for them. But they got veteran guards. They got good players. They shoot the hell out of the ball. And they got Tom Izzo. Like, yeah, I'm going to ride with that. I'm going to ride with that combo.
Yeah, well, you can't go chalk every
right.
Every
and reason. I did in the other ones. Hey, my other reasons.
Okay.
Are chalk. Although Alabama still scares me a little bit.
A little bit of a curveball here. If you could, is there one team in the tournament, Jeff, that if you had to play them in a series, 7-game series, who's the best team to win to beat it? Who would be the toughest team to beat in a 7-game series in this whole tournament?
I think Houston. And that's why I'm picking them to win it all. I just think they're the steadiest. They're the ones with the least amount of question marks, right? They've got a hell of a coach. They've got three guards. And I'm told Sasser is going to play.
Oh,
so
good.
I'm told, and that's going to be huge. I think he's going to play the first game. And maybe they'll hold him out just out of precautionary reasons because they don't need him in that first game. But I'm told he's going to be healthy enough to be able to play that first game, which is huge. But they got three guards that can all make plays off the bounce. They got multiple guys that can run the point. They got older guards. They got a potential lottery pick up front in freshman Jairus Walker. They've got bigs that know their role, that are tough, that rebound, that run, that protect the rim. And they've got, again, Kelvin Sampson leading them.
Yeah.
You can say what you want about him, but the dude can coach.
Is it my favorite? You didn't go Alabama because of all the smoke.
Yeah, and they're just young. And I don't know, when's the last time, like, it's Kentucky, right? Like, the last time that a real freshman-laden team, and Alabama's got some old dudes, but their best players are Brandon Miller and Noah Clowney. Their most talented players, they're both freshmen. Then you had Jaden Bradley. He's in the top eight. They got four of their top eight players are freshmen. I don't trust it. I don't trust, and with all the other crap that's gone on with them, and they've handled it well on the court for the most part. They've righted the ship. I actually think they were playing with fire for a while and not playing well, but they were great in the SEC tournament, and that gave me confidence enough to pick them to go to the Final Four. I just, again, I'm looking at coaching. I'm looking at guard play. I'm looking at experience. Those are the three things. And to me, Nate Oates doesn't have the experience of going deep in the tournament yet. And Mark Sears worries me. Every time I watch them at the end of the game, I feel like Mark Sears is making a bonehead play.
Mm. Okay.
Talk to me about the my favorite team, arguably, besides Kentucky, over the last three seasons, had a great run. Oh, talk about coaching, guard play. Talk to me about Mick Cronin, Jaime Jaquez, and the UCLA Bruins. They've been on a heck of a run.
Stick a fork in them. They can't win it all.
Yeah.
They cannot win it all without Jalen Clark. Listen, before they lost Jalen Clark, they were thin, and I worried about their depth. And now you've got your best defender and a guy that was like not a go-to guy, because obviously you got Jaquez and Tiger. Those are your go-to guys. But they didn't have any depth before. They had six dudes before, six guys. Mm. Now you're down to five, plus you've got your starting center. The kid Bona, he's hurt. You know, he had a shoulder injury, and we don't know. He'll probably come back. We don't know how healthy and how he'll be. So I'm done. I'm out. And I picked them to win it all in the preseason. If they were healthy and they had seven, if they had developed one more dude off the bench, I think they were the favorite to win the whole thing this year because of Jaquez and Tiger. But yeah, I'm out on them completely.
I feel like if you had one guy in the entire field that could just will you to a Final Four behind me, he is a killer. He's proved it in the tournament. Like, he just will not let them lose at times. But
tough MF, yeah. Right? Tough MF.
God's got to love
it the right
him.
Way. Like, doesn't want the attention, just plays ball the right way.
Yeah. Okay.
If you liked Texas at the beginning of the season, why wouldn't you like Texas now? I'm asking.
I liked them a lot. And Josh knows what I think of Beard as a coach. Now, again, we can get into the other discussion of should Beard have been hired at Ole Miss, whatever. Right. That's a separate discussion. But right. Chris Beard as a coach was elite, elite. He took Texas Tech to basically one possession away from winning the whole thing at Texas Tech in Lubbock. Okay. So he's elite. Rodney Terry's done a hell of a job, but I mean, there's a lot there to look at UTEP and Fresno, what he's done. Mm-hmm. Rodney's done a good job keeping the ship not only afloat, but really humming. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, to me, his biggest strength is his ability to connect with people and kids. He's done an unbelievable job. I think they might lose in the first round to Colgate. I really.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah.
Wow. If they did, would the coach be gone?
Yeah, I don't think they keep him. I think Rodney's got to get to the Sweet 16. And then here's my take on that one is Chris Del Conte doesn't want to hire Rodney Terry. He wants to go after a big boy. And if he can land Scott Drew, which I don't think he can, or Kelvin Sampson, who's got too big a buyout. So you can't get Kelvin. But let's say you give Scott Drew an offer he cannot refuse, for argument's sake. I don't care if Rodney Terry takes you to the Elite Eight. Who the hell would you rather have, Scott Drew or Rodney Terry? I'm taking Scott Drew. If he can't get a big boy and Rodney Terry goes to at least the Sweet 16, I think you hire him. But I think it's with a smaller buyout on a deal that's favorable to you. And you say, hey, Rodney, here's the deal. Take it or leave it. Go try to get Cal if you want. But we're not paying you Chris Beard money or anything close to it. You had a hell of a year. Here's my take, guys. Just because you're the right guy for the job short term does not mean you're the right guy for the job long term. And all you need to do is look at Wichita State for that. They fired Greg Marshall right before the season. Isaac Brown took over on an interim basis, did well. They gave him the job permanently. He got him to the NCAA tournament year one. He is now fired after year three.
Wow. Jeff, you're on the road. We talked about this a little bit. You're on the road for the next few weeks. First, how's Talia doing? Your daughter, Talia.
Good, man. She's good. I saw her in Chicago a little bit. How about this? She did a sit down with Pat Knight for her class. One of her classes was pick somebody to do a story on a
podcast. Fantastic. Okay?
So Pat Knight, she had met a year ago, and he's scouting with the Pacers, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she sits down with him. First of all, it was the second time he's been at Assembly Hall since they were fired more than 20 years ago. The only other time was 3 years ago with his dad when he brought Bob back.
Right.
So he walks in, and even when he was there three years ago, he hadn't had a chance. He just like was with his dad. He brought him out, and that was kind of it. So he's looking around at the place. Well, anyway, I'll send you guys a clip. Remind me when we get off. I'm not going to put it on here because there's a lot of profanities in there. But yeah. Pat Knight is like the best interview you will ever. And he doesn't really do interviews. And sitting down with my 19-year-old daughter dropping F-bombs. And it's entertaining as all hell. I'm going to give you 1 minute of a 45-minute clip. But it's just so cool. Like I'm watching my daughter interview Pat Knight, and I'm right there watching. And I'm just like beaming as a father. Like beaming.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Hey, are you able to enjoy this time of year, Jeff? The games are going on, but as we alluded to earlier, coaching changes, transfer portals, you have to be on top of that. Are you able to enjoy it at all?
Not like I used to. You know, you used to go and watch a game and not have to work. The days of pre-Twitter were awesome because you can literally watch the whole game and not be distracted, right? I mean, I might get calls of a job breaking, but it wasn't like even if I got them, I wasn't in a crazy rush because it wasn't the world of Twitter and immediate. You know, I was fighting with like Andy Katz to break news, and that was about it. So now it's like during a game, I mean, I was a Big Ten tournament, and I'm constantly getting up in the middle of the game. I can't hear shit when somebody calls me, right? They're calling a coach, an AD, or whoever. Hey, this is going on. I'm like, I got to walk out to the tunnel. Listen, I miss, 5 minutes of the game. I come back. What the hell happened? What's going on? I might miss an ending of a game. So I pray every day that these jobs get filled quickly so I can go out at the Final Four. That's my biggest thing is I want to be able to go out at night and not have to look at my phone at all. I remember years ago when Shaka got hired at Texas, I was at one of those Final Four parties and it broke. And I'm like, screw that. Like, I don't want to deal with this now. I'm like 8 beers in. And I learned, hey, guys, I learned.
My guy.
I remember when I was at ESPN, it was like an off night. And I was drinking, watching games, right? I'm drinking, watching games. It's just like year one at ESPN. And and they called me to go on SportsCenter. And I was like, I was a bunch in at that point. And something, I forget what it was a coaching job that broke. And I was just like, can I pull this off or not? Like, how am I going to sound in
play
this
it one? Safe. Play it safe.
I did it. And luckily, again, it wasn't on camera. So I didn't.
Right.
I was okay.
Good. All right. Real quick, before we let you go, Jeff, who's your final four? Who's winning it all?
So I have Alabama playing Michigan State. I have Houston playing Kansas. Again, the common denominator in all four of those are really good coaches and really good guards. And I have Houston beating Alabama in the national title game because of experience in Houston also. So that would be kind of a cool story. I'm sure you'd have Hakeem and Clyde Drexler and all those dudes in the building for that
sir.
One.
Oh, yeah.
That would be kind of fun, right? Five slamma jamma back in the building for that. It'd be kind of cool if that happens, wouldn't it?
That would be very cool. Never thought about that. Real quick, you went to Arizona. They have potential Missouri second round, three guard lineup, maybe quick. Does that scare you at all?
Yes, because Arizona's got two bigs, two traditional bigs. Last year, they had the kid Coloco who could guard anybody. He could switch out on anybody on the perimeter. And they don't have that now. You know, Tubelis and Balo are two guys that can't really guard in the perimeter. So I don't think Arizona can go far. And I think Missouri can beat them if they're making shots, because what does Missouri have? No big. I mean, they just got dudes that can step out and shoot it. So it's really a contrast of styles. How are you guys doing? You guys good?
We're great. We're great. Fired up.
Yeah. I can't believe you made it together for the year. You know, the two of you.
I know. We're hanging in there.
I know. So you heard it. Jeff Goodman's got Houston cutting them down. I do.
That's right.
I do. But Jeff, I think Goodman. Kentucky, listen, it's funny. Before the year, I said to myself, the one game that I have to go to, I might have said this in your pod too. The one game I have to go to this year is Kentucky's first round game. Because I felt like, all right, Kentucky's going to be a one or two seed. And obviously we know what's happened the last couple of years. This is going to be a defining game for John Calipari. I'm not sure that's the case now. Like, I'm not there, obviously, because there's not the same level of pressure. They're not the heavy, heavy favorite. In fact, the spread's like 4 right now, somewhere around there. I don't know if it's moved. But, you know, what do you guys think now? Like, how much pressure? I'm curious to get both of your thoughts before we get off, if you can. The amount of pressure that's on John Calipari to win at least this first round game and maybe two to get to the second weekend.
I think the pressure, I think it's all – Cal is so experienced at this point, I think, you know, that he doesn't ride with the highs and the lows. He kind of stays in the middle. I think the pressure that's on him, he'll put on himself. The guy is he's a worker. So I don't think as much about that. I see from the outside looking in, it looks a little sketchy. But I think we win.
I think we go days. It's been like 1,400 days since you guys have won a tournament game. Like, could you go another 365?
Well, that's been Jeff Goodman. Thanks for coming in, Jeff. You've been great. I will tell you this, man. I get what you're saying. Like, if we were number one, number two, and, you know, if some team got hot, boy, that would be something. But if you're going to put this season, the worst case scenario for first round, you know, if Hopkins goes for 40 and we lose, that is a bad, bad look.
That'd be bad.
That'd be really, really tough.
What if he just loses, Josh? What if they lose a close game to Providence and they lose in the first round? Is the fan base up in arms saying we want Cal gone? Or because they had a rebound second half of the season, are they okay? Do they feel a little bit better with arguably the number one class in the country, which I still, you know, would debate? Not that it's not the number one class, just that this class is super weak and you're not winning with young players, with freshmen. I think it's almost like they better get some older dudes to go along with them next year. But again, is the fan base out of their minds if they lose in the first round again and ready to send it packing or no?
The answer
they're
is
out of
Kentucky.
Their minds. Yeah,
it's they're Kentucky. Out they're out of their minds. For sure. And for sure, with the number one class coming in, they'll, you know, he's got that jacket to wear.
Yeah.
But amazingly, if you'd said 5 years ago that in 5 years we'd be having this conversation. It'd be amazing. Yeah, that's nuts.
Amazing. Yeah. Absolutely shocking. It is. But you know what? I thought about this the other day, guys. The gap has closed because of the portal, right? The portal, certainly. NIL, but Kentucky's got NIL. That's not affecting Kentucky. They can't use that as an excuse. But I think the other thing is the COVID year. The extra COVID year has really shrunk the gap now. Look at Penn State. They're a great example, right? Penn State is, you know, you're talking about a team. They're the oldest team in the country. They brought in all these dudes. I just saw them in the Big Ten tournament. And yeah, Penn State can do what they're doing because they're so old. They're so experienced. And that, to me, that closed the gap for these 3 or 4 years. And we got probably 2 more years of it.
Yeah, sure. But I think Cal took advantage of that, too. He's had the oldest teams he's ever had. He's brought in some men to play in this time. And it just hasn't. Nothing's gel, but
well, you know what? You don't want a big. You know what you don't want? You just don't want traditional bigs anymore. You just don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're great. Yeah. They're great at times. Obviously, I love Oscar. Like, Oscar's the best kid in the world. But in the NCAA tournament, it scares you because they can be exposed, and they are exposed against, you know, smaller mid-majors,
smaller, more athletic,
or Missouri, the Missouris of the world,
And
states. Like, you don't want to see them because Oscar cannot guard out there. He can't, and he doesn't protect the rim. So it's like, yeah, he's going to get you 2 on the other end. He better get you 2 because if he's not scoring 20, he's giving up 20 on the other end.
That's right. Jeff Goodman, we're going to let you get out of here, buddy. You got a busy, busy time ahead of you.
Love you guys. Love I wish I could spend another hour.
Love you, man.
I do.
Same. Man, thanks.
So cool thanks of you to come in.
Love you. Mean thanks. That. Go get him. Hopefully I'll see you guys along the way. I don't know. Maybe, you know, listen, stranger things have happened. Maybe Kentucky gets to Houston. You never know.
Let's go. Hey,
there's always a UConn example.
Thanks, Jeff Goodman.
You got it, guys.
Talk to you soon. Episode 78 of the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from Lextown, Josh Hopkins, continues. And Josh, I am pleased to welcome studio analyst for Big Ten Network, NCAA tournament bracket analyst for Fox Sports, college basketball columnist for Sporting News in his 36th year covering college basketball, and will be covering his 33rd Final Four. Let's welcome Michael Anthony DeCourcy.
There you go. You know, I'll tell you a story about that. Anthony was not the best middle name, but my brother's middle name, and I'm going to shout it out to the world. My brother's middle name is Jude. And when he was graduating high school, he went to the principal and, like, basically, you know, either I don't know if it was begged or insisted. He was a basketball player, 6 foot. So he might have insisted. I don't know. That when he was announced at graduation, everybody else was full name. He was Patrick J. DeCourcy. True story.
He was not going for the full name at the graduation.
He didn't want to hear that song sung for the rest of his life.
How's it going, Mike? Where are you right now?
I am in Charlotte at the headquarters of Sporting News, the U.S. headquarters of Sporting News. And I'll be going up serendipitously. They wanted me to come down and see the crowd here for today and tomorrow. And at the time, I did not know that Greensboro was going to be filled by not only the Wildcats, but like a ton of Pittsburgh homies. You know, I'm a Pittsburgh native. And so now we got Pitt, we got Sean Miller, we got Cal, and we got me. So Greensboro is going to be a terrible town on Friday night.
It's a happening place. I know you've had plenty of time so far. I'm sure you have to look over these brackets. What jumps out for you, Mike, storyline wise? We'll get into the teams later. What stories do you like about this tournament?
Well, they're the stories that I don't like to start, which is everything that happened at Alabama and how it was handled. Everything that happened was horrendous. But
yes.
And the part that puts it into my world, so to speak, is that a player from the team has been arrested and charged, that other players were present when this occurred, that even the attorney for one of the players, Brandon Miller, acknowledges that the weapon that allegedly was used in the crime was in Brandon's car and ferried to the scene at the request of one of the two people who's been charged by Brandon. So all of that stuff, and I can try to hide from it, but I will be covering the South region, and I have every belief that that Alabama will be in Louisville with me. And so there's no way to hide from it. And the other reason I don't think I can is to take it back to the floor. And that is that Alabama has been presented with a region that it, relative to this field could not have been easier. I mean, they could. When one says it's an easy bracket, I mean, you're talking in relative terms. I mean, it's not easy to win four games in this tournament, but it's easier to win four games in the South region than it is for, say, the number one seed in the West, which might have to defeat a terrific UConn team. Arkansas, Illinois, I think, is a stronger 8-9 concern, although obviously Alabama couldn't have played Arkansas anyway. And then down at the bottom of the bracket, you've got Gonzaga, TCU, UCLA. You only have to face one of them, but you're almost guaranteed to face somebody really good. So I think for that reason, Alabama is to me the dominant storyline. And I, as you mentioned, this will be my 33rd Final Four, and in none of those previous, none of the 32 previous, have we ever had a circumstance anything like this. And so, you know, we've had some programs that were under an NCAA investigation along the way. You know, the TARC versus the NCAA narrative ruled both the 90 NCAA tournament and even more so 91 when they tried to come back and repeat. So those kinds of things were out there, but that's not life or death.
I've got a couple questions about the Alabama thing, Mike, that I haven't, maybe we don't know these answers yet. Maybe they're not out there. Whose gun? Was the gun registered? Whose gun was it? And then if the guy who was charged called back to talk to Brandon Miller or called back to the dorm, I assume.
He texted from what the police officer said, who testified in the hearing a couple weeks ago, he texted.
He texted. So, but Brandon Miller presumably is in his dorm on campus. You can't have guns on campus and on any campus. Yeah, I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah, I think what the attorney said, and I don't know where Brandon was. I don't know whether that's been established or not. What the attorney said was that the weapon was in the back seat and not visible. I don't know, maybe under a shirt or a book or something. I don't know. But he became made aware of that, of the presence of the weapon at the very latest in the text message. He may have, you know, we don't know.
Right.
The attorney saying he did not. So we'll take his word for that. And so he was maybe unaware that it was there and was asked to bring it back to that location. So, I don't know who owned it, and I don't know whether it was registered. I don't know if that's been established or not.
Got you. All right. Well, let's move off of Alabama. Let's get to something better. Kentucky basketball. Josh and I are both Kentucky guys, born and raised. Talk to us a little bit about our Kentucky Wildcats and whether John Calipari needs to win a couple games in the tournament.
Well, I think it would certainly be helpful for John and for Kentucky if they can do that. And I think they can. I think they're well positioned to do that. Providence is certainly a very capable team. They played some good basketball in the Big East this year. Lately, it hasn't been as smooth for the Friars. But that's not the reason I picked Kentucky on my bracket. I picked them because they're better. Now, they're better under certain circumstances. And the first circumstance is, are they healthy? Rex, you watched the game against Vanderbilt last Friday, and Cason Wallace was a shadow of himself.
Right.
He is not the best in college basketball, although he's a very fine defender and has a great reputation as a defender. One thing where he is not exceptional at this stage is containing dribble penetration. He does let a lot of guys go by him. I think you know, in time, he'll use his length and his positioning and his strength to do a better job containing. But right now, it's not his greatest strength. He's terrific at being a disruptive defender. It's why when they were playing Xavier Wheeler, he was a really valuable defender because he's playing off the ball. And now he's getting into passing lanes and getting steals. I mean, he had the 9 steals in the Michigan State game. So that was a problem. But it was a problem multiplied in the Vanderbilt game where it was pretty clear he wasn't healthy. After watching it and second guessing, totally admitting a total second guess here, I thought, after having seen what he looked like, I thought they would have been better off if they just tried to replicate the Arkansas game. Mm-hmm. And it, because you're, if you did win, you were going to have to go back and do it again the next day and the next day. And right. So if that's where he was on Friday, how would he be after 40 minutes and then having to go the next day? So right. I kind of did think that, like I said, because I don't see him every day in practice and I didn't, you know, but I only saw what I saw. And I remember thinking back, maybe they should have just given him the day off, take their chances against Vandy, see if they could do what they did against Arkansas. But if they're healthy, they should be fine. They do a really nice job of executing on offense. That was one of the really funny things about this season is the narrative that developed that was fueled by the anonymous coach, not one, but many, that Kentucky's offense is antiquated and that's the problem with the program. And I keep looking at KenPom and I see they're like 12th in offense and like 70th in defense. And I'm like, come on, man, it is right there. You don't even have to look beyond that. Their problem is they don't guard very well and they give up a lot of points. And on offense, they're not great, but when they're getting it going, when they're at their best, they're very good. So that's something that we'll see whether or not the defense that starts at the point of attack, whether or not that's effective. And now, knowing Providence's team pretty well, Jared Bynum, their point guard, he can go by you to the foul line. He's not a guy that's taking it all the way to the rim. So if you just do a job in that sense, and if you read the scouting report and make sure that you keep him under control, I think you can contain them. You can do well against them, but you obviously have to be healthy and performing at your best level.
Providence, Kentucky plays Providence, and Ed Cooley, friend of the show, he came on our show before. We're big fans of Ed Cooley, he's a Providence staple, born and raised. Is he going to leave? Is he going to leave and go elsewhere?
I think based on what's out there so far, I think the first priority for him would be to see what Providence can pay him. How much higher can they go? Because he's not among the highest paid coaches. USA Right. Today, every tournament comes out with a list of what the coaches are making. And sometimes they have the exact figures because they're public record. And sometimes they have to do a little estimation or work pretty hard to report it. I think you'll find out tomorrow that he's not extraordinarily highly paid relative to what's out there. And I've been told that Georgetown is whomever they get, whether it's Ed or someone else, that they're going to be willing to step forward and pay a significant amount, the kind of money that, you know, not Cal money, but you'd be flirting with the top 10 kind of money.
Wow.
In terms of earnings. So I think that for that reason, he can't turn it down now and say, I'm just staying at Providence.
Right.
Because I think you only get leverage so often, so many times in your career. And so why not get a long-term extension and do something with that? Maybe they can't pay. I don't think Providence can pay $5 million.
Yeah.
They can give him long-term assurances that he won't turn down $5 million a year, and then all of a sudden in 5 years, Providence says, oh yeah, we're kind of tired of you.
Right.
I mean, that's unlikely, but you can't gamble with that.
Yeah.
In 2019, fall of 2018, Cincinnati was coming off earning a number 2 seed, winning dual championships in the American Conference. And Mick Cronin wanted assurances. He wanted a long-term contract. Like, if I'm staying here, I'm not turning down big money elsewhere. I'm staying here for less money, but I'm guaranteed that I'm going to be making less money for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And the athletic director at the time offered him a 4-year contract at actually slightly less money than he was making, because some of the bonuses were changed in terms of
hiring.
Yes. So, you know, like a tournament bonus went to a Sweet 16 bonus or a bonus. So, of course, UCLA winds up looking for a great coach, and they find him. And now he's at UCLA and he's super happy that he did it. But if they had said, okay, 10 years, $2.5 million, whatever the number was, he would have taken it and he would still be there. Right. And they wouldn't be on their third coach since 2019. So that's, I think that's how Providence can keep Ed and then keep Georgetown. You know, not only do you not want to lose Ed because he's fantastic, but you don't want to lose him to a league competitor that he's going to make even better than he's made you, because it's a slightly less difficult job.
And he's also a hometown guy. I mean, the story writes itself. Yeah. You know, he was great on the show. Mike, I am loving this. Your knowledge dripping out of you, and you're like, oh, back in 2002 in Cincinnati. I can't believe it, man. I can't believe it. Since you went to UCLA, Jalen Clark, how big of a deal is that? Because I love them all year. Jaime is one of my favorite players. He's a warrior. I was saying the type of guy who will not let you lose in certain situations. He's just a killer. He's so good. And he's been around. But, I mean, he can't take you the whole way. How big of an injury is that for them?
It's enormous, because what was happening for them, they have a freshman on the opposite wing named Amari Bailey, who is very talented and as dynamic as Jalen is, but maybe more skilled offensively. And so the two of them, along with Tiger Campbell being really solid pressure against the basketball, the two of them made UCLA the most disruptive defense in the country. They could change games with their ability to disrupt. And if you go back to Maryland, their game against Maryland in December, I mean, there has not no team on this bracket has been beaten as badly as Maryland was on their home court. Wow. By UCLA, because they just kept taking the ball away. It was unbelievable. And Maryland did not lose another game in that building. They went 18 and 0, or it went 10 and 0 in the league, and I think 18 and 1 overall or something like that. It was the only game they lost, but they didn't just lose it, they were humiliated. And so that's what they were at their best, and they were starting to get to be that regularly. And what happened when he's not available, or as was the case in January, Amari was not available for a period of about a month. David Singleton, who is a senior veteran, I think he's played 5 years now, so I think he's done out of eligibility, who is the perfect 20-minute a game player. So they were using him 10 minutes on Jalen's wing and 10 minutes on Amari's wing. Mm-hmm. And he is the best shooter when he is in that role that there is in college basketball.
Wow.
I mean, he's one of those guys that, like Rex Chapman, when he shoots it, you think, you know, that ball's going in no matter, you know, every time. And so now with he's having to play 30 plus minutes as a starter now on Jalen's wing, he's working his tail off to be an effective defender. And his offensive piece gets lost.
Yeah.
He scored 0 points, 0 points in the Arizona game in the Pac-12 championship final. And he's a guy who he probably has had, everybody has their off nights. You go through somebody's game log as a shooter, and they're going to have, the best ones are going to have the 2 of 3s and the 3 of 5s and then the really great night where they go 6 of 8 or whatever. And then maybe like 4 times, 5 times, 6 times a year, they're going to have that 0 for 3 or whatever, or 0 for 6. And he almost never had those, just a couple. And now he's barely even getting off shots. So that's where it really hurts them. It basically damages two positions at once, in the way that Tennessee is damaged by Zakai Ziegler not being there. Mm-hmm. And now they're damaged, not because Santiago Viscovi has not become a better point guard than he used to be, but because he's not as good as Zakai, and a shooting guard to replace him isn't as good as Santiago is. So that's where UCLA gets hurt, and why I think eventually, short of the Final Four, that team's going to get beaten.
Who do you have in your Final Four, Mike?
Yeah, I have Alabama coming out of the South, as I mentioned. Duke in the East.
And that's been Mike DeCourcy, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Well, I was with again. Good.
I have Texas in the Midwest and UConn in the West. And I will tell you that as I was doing this on Sunday night, and I was going through each matchup, trying to break it down, looking at KenPom and some how do they match up to one another the best I could. And when you get done with picking every team, you look at it and you're like, Alabama, Texas, Duke, and UConn. And you're like, oh my God, I hate this Final Four. Why did I pick it? And it's like, you want to go start over again, but you're kind of done, you know? So
yeah.
And the problem is that my bracket gets shared by the Sporting News. And so like a billion people can see it.
Right. Of course.
So of course. I got done. And one thing that's true that has been almost universal over the last 20 years, if you look at KenPom, the front page where everybody can access, it's a $20 site if you want to subscribe, the best $20 I spend every year. But if you just want to look at the front page, it lists the offensive and defensive efficiency ranks for every single team all the way down. And every champion except UConn in 2014 has been top 20 in both categories. Now, they didn't all start out that way. Most did. Duke started out like 38th or something when they entered the tournament in D, and then their rank kept going up as they kept winning games and shutting teams down. But you will have to be great at both ends. And so when I looked at my bracket at the end, there were four teams that are currently top 20 in both categories, and three of them are in my Final Four. So now I felt better about it.
Right.
Alabama, Texas, UConn are all top 20 in both. Duke is not. I think defensively they are probably around 36, 38, something like that. So that's one of the things that, you know, I tell people when they're picking their champion, make sure they're top 20 on both sides and make sure they have a first round draft pick, because 1987, the last time we had a team that won the championship without having a first round draft pick. And all they needed to win it was an all time great college player, top 35 college player in history, Steve Alford.
They beat us in overtime that year.
There you go. And then Bob Knight on the bench. So that's all you need.
Keith Smart, Dean Garrett, good college players, not all Americans, not first round guys. Yeah. I say that a lot.
Towards the baseline.
I say that all the time. And the one that makes me that I think about right away is the Michigan State team with Mateen Cleaves and Charlie Bell. That team, you know, you looked at it all year long. You're like, all right. Turns out those two guys were NBA players. And a lot of times, you know, you go back a few years ago, Kentucky and Wichita State, Ron Baker, Fred VanVleet, pro NBA pro players.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So a lot of times you can go down these lists. Don't forget to look for the really, really good players on some of these teams, right?
Absolutely. When I wrote this little thing and I said that, you know, when I get done and I feel bad about my bracket, I look at some of the other expert brackets and I look for the ones that pick the teams that are really good college teams, but don't have any pros. And I chuckle inside because I say to myself, I know I'm going to be wrong, but they're wrong already.
Right. Well, Rex says on this show a lot, and it's true. It's like, you got to be careful though, because if you're talking about who's going to be good in 4 years, there's guys like, right. I mean, I think Cason Wallace is going to be a fantastic pro. His offenses, he's got beautiful, his mechanics, he looks good. Everything's going to come around. His body's made for the league. But is he's not that type of guy that you get on his back in this tournament as a freshman. If he was a junior, oh my God.
But one thing, Josh, it's not necessarily about getting on their back. It's about in specific moments. When everything is locked down, when the other coach that you're playing against has every play figured out and has coached it to their guys, and because they're locked into, they're not like their minds aren't wandering to their girlfriends or the party on Friday night or anything that they might on a Tuesday night in February, but in March they're locked down. They're right. This close. So everybody's got everything scouted in it, and you can't go anywhere for 25 seconds. And then somebody like Kaysen says, okay, that's all right. You right. can't stop me. Right. And even if he just does it twice, it makes a difference. The guy who is not going to be a pro more often than not can't do that.
Right.
That's
right.
why. Right. And that's why you have to have that guy.
Why don't you have Houston in the Final Four? Where do they break down?
The primary reason I didn't pick Houston was there were two reasons, I think. One was it felt like a year, based on the way the season developed, that you weren't going to have multiple one seeds at the Final Four. That was part of it. The biggest part was that I had already acknowledged that based on the bracket, Alabama would have, they're going to have to punt this to not get there. So that was one reason. And the other reason was Marcus Sasser. If you were watching the game that they were playing, I can't even remember who they were playing in their semi. I think it was Cincinnati. They were playing, and he just planted one way and moved his torso the other. And you could see right away. Well, like the only question was, what did he hurt?
Yeah, what did he hurt?
And he reached for his thigh. I thought maybe it was a quad, because you don't see a lot of groin injuries, you know, in hoops. But that's what it was. And so is he better enough to win games against good teams? And they'll have to beat Auburn or Iowa in the second round. Iowa is a fantastic offensive team. On their best day, they're the best. They're maybe the best offensive team in the tournament. They can be really. And then Auburn. This is Bruce's time. Bruce Pearl has such a great record in the tournament, and I know it's Kelvin's time too. But Bruce isn't carrying around an injured star, so that's a problem. And then Indiana, maybe with the two pros they have, Trace Jackson Davis, one of the three best players in college basketball. So. That's why I originally, coming into March, that was the one team I kept looking at thinking, they're the one team I feel like I can trust, because they've got an experienced coach who's been in the Final Four. They've got offensive ability with Marcus. They've got pro level guys in the front court. They've got a point guard in Jamal Shedd who's been to the Elite Eight. He knows exactly how to handle this stuff. But I just felt like, you know, if I'm going to pick a team, I'd like them to be healthy going in.
Yeah.
What if they make it to the second weekend for sure and he looks okay? If they make it to the third weekend, then do you reevaluate? Not that you got your picks, but then that really helps them.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, they are at 100%, like as they were when the American tournament started. They are as qualified to win this tournament as any team, maybe more so, because they meet all the qualifications that you ordinarily would want. I mean, some of the lesser ones that get disrupted more, like a coach who's been there before, like Scott Drew won first time he was at the Final Four. That's pretty rare. Yeah. But as Scott showed, it's not an almost never happens thing. It's just rare. So that would be Nate Oates theoretically versus Kelvin Sampson, been there versus not.
Right.
So they have every box checked in that department. And so I would like Houston very much. If they make it to Houston, I would think they would have a great chance. And obviously, I mean, I was there in Indy in 2010 when Butler made it to the Final Four. And, you know, Butler's got a small following, not a small, but they, you know, they get 10,000 games. And that's that's a big portion of their fan base.
Right.
It's an important program in Indianapolis where I live, but it's not, you know, I mean, I think there are probably still more IU and Purdue fans in town, even though those schools are slightly removed from the city geographically. But when I got to the 2010 Final Four and got to the Lucas Oil Stadium, I mean, that place was blue. There was almost no one else there. So that same thing will happen if the Cougars get to NRG Stadium. Right. That place will be straight red.
That's right. Alabama, they're so young, and Josh and I talk about this all the time. You know, even your best player, when he's Brandon Miller, is going to be a terrific pro, I'm sure. But Josh and I've had experience with those young teams. And you know, I go back to the team that had Bam Adebayo, De'Aaron Fox, and Malik Monk. They get beat in the tournament. We're all crushed. If we could have only played that game 6 months later, you know, 6 months is all we're talking about. We just need our guys a few months older, right? The team with Devin Booker and Karl Towns that went 38-0 and they get upset. You can't fast track that experience. And I just feel like with Alabama, and they've got the world sort of pulling against them right now. Right. Yeah. So I just think, I think back to being a young player and, you know, you're in a big moment and you get a really legitimately bad call go against you. Like, and you're so young. Yeah. You're so young. You lose your mind. And, you know, maybe the game's over at that point. So there's all kinds of these variables that come in. Mike, I can't thank you enough for doing this here today. I want to ask you, Josh, and I normally ask a couple questions before we go. What's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie is Rocky.
Fantastic.
It came out when I was in high school, and it just sort of inspired me to. I was a heavy kid, and you know, when I decided to get in shape, that music was always playing. When I was younger,
that's
we
didn't have the Walkman. iPhones,
so that music was playing in my head when I was running a lot. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
And then Mike, if you could see any performer or speaker, anything front row center, alive or dead.
Okay.
Who would you see?
Wow. So I have seen just about everybody I'd want to see. I think I'm going to say Paul McCartney or the Beatles as a group. Yeah. I guess if I could see the Beatles as a group, I would see that. Yeah. I mean,
we haven't had that one yet.
I was thinking somewhat Sinatra. McCartney played in Cincinnati when we lived there, and we were leaving on vacation the next morning, and it killed me that I couldn't go.
Oh.
I keep waiting for that chance to come back around, but it hasn't yet.
I'd love to see that too.
Great Mike, answers.
Cannot thank you enough. Safe travels during the tournament. Please come back and talk hoops with us sometime.
I would love to. It was an honor to do it, Josh and Rex. It was fantastic and a real pleasure. Enjoy the rest of March and good luck to your cats.
Thank you. Good luck with your brackets.
Yeah, honor to have you.
Josh, doubleheader. We had a doubleheader today. Mm-hmm. Michael Anthony DeCourcy and our guy, Jeffrey Neil Goodman.
Yes. That people need to listen to this before they fill out their brackets.
We got two guys with a wealth of knowledge on the college basketball scene on here today. What? And they love it. They love it. You can tell they love it. This is the time. This is their time of year. It's like Christmas for them, right?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, they eat it up. They live it. They managed to make a great living just watching basketball, reporting about their passion. And boy, are they passionate. And those two, to me, would make the perfect – these are the perfect two guests to have.
They are.
Because they are so different in the way they analyze and look at the game. And you get so many different little nuggets.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way they discuss things. Like, I mean, I would say that, like, Jeff, you want to have a beer with him and him tell you things and talk about games. And Mike, you want to have dinner with. Because, you know, he's going to sit there and he breaks these little things down. Like Mike was breaking down, talking about
UCLA.
The friend of the show.
Ed Cooley.
And he was like, you know, you don't get a lot of, time where you can really put it to the AD, he would like to stay here. And then Jeff was like, now Ed likes to be liked. And so it was two totally different takes on the same thing. And it was endlessly fascinating to me.
Yeah,
and the way he broke down Kentucky, I've watched them all year. And he was like, look, this is the thing. You get around the corner. And Kaysen's a great defender, but he's not great at staying in front of a guy. Now he'll learn to be physical. And I'm like, oh, he's a great disruptor. And thinking about him now, you know, when he was off the ball, he got all those steals and those things.
What? Know what else makes more sense with that breakdown from Mike? It makes more sense why Wheeler was playing more early in the season because of his ability to stay in front of the ball. Right. Yep. And
absolutely.
tried it and it just wasn't working. But that's the trade-off. Now he's not playing. You get Kaysen, but he's a freshman point guard that has to contain the basketball now. So there's a trade-off.
Yeah, that's really, I guess, a microcosm of maybe what's wrong with this team in that you didn't have enough offensive power and shooters with Wheeler on the court. Mm-hmm. But you had a guy
who were a little better defensively,
in front.
Right.
And then, but he's a liability and we had too many perimeter liabilities.
Right.
You get in there and you put in these other guys. Now your offense really starts clicking, but you see it when guards go downhill on us, like Vandy did.
Basketball coaches are insane to begin with. But you can imagine being a basketball coach with a really good team, but you just don't have a guy who can stay with jitterbug guards in the backcourt. That is terrifying because I've said it before on here. I know it's hard to get your offense going when you're getting torched defensively. Like, think about it, Josh. Remember, you ever go to the park and you're guarding a guy and he's just scoring every time? It's hard for you to go down the other end and feel like, oh, let me get in my bag now. No, you've been getting your ass kicked on the other end. This guy got you in his hip pocket. So it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, that was interesting. Both of those guys, I'm so grateful they came on
and
right now.
Taking time out of their day to come on and do a pod right in the middle of their busiest time of the year.
This is good Santa guys. Claus on Christmas Eve coming to do our podcast. That was so great of both of them. Really, really appreciate it.
Well, that's been it with Mike DeCourcy and Jeff Goodman. You want to do it again next week, Josh?
I really would.
Let's do it. Let's come back, see how our brackets are doing next week. Next time on the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from the Lextown, Josh Hopkins. We'll be back next week, powered by basketballnews.com.